Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Good Friday morning to you.
It's not good Friday, but like good Friday morning as well. Just little personal check-in before we get deep into the heart of Leafs Bruins preview here.
Mm-hmm.
You okay this morning? I feel like I was yammering your ear off a little too much. We have like former Leaf Jake Gardner joining us onto the show, and that just sent me down a Leaf time capsule. And I normally feel like I try to... So I'm a chatty Kathy in the morning, okay? Or a chatty Ken, okay? And so I tried to restrain myself, but then I got talking Leafs and like the throes of playoff pain past, and I feel like I yammered your ear off a bit. So I just like to, before you even answer the question, and I realize I'm doing it again, I'm yammering your ear off, like say I'm sorry and good morning.
Thank you. See, it sounds less sincere when you do it on the air, when you say, I'm sorry.
You know what it was I realized at 59, I was like, ooh, you're just the backboard here. You don't, you're just like, yep, that happened. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, Phil Kessel played 13 minutes. You're like, yeah, I know. It's factually true.
I know, yeah. I could read a box score,
so
too.
So that's all. I it didn't occur to me until 59, and I thought, honestly, better.
It didn't occur to you.
No, it doesn't. It rarely does.
Yeah. Here's the deal, Brent. Okay.
You're going full master's voice on me right now. Like, hello, friends.
Well, here's, please stop talking. This is a relevant voice for what I'm about to say. Is that it's not the quantity of words that come out of your mouth. It's the volume at which they come out of your mouth.
Oh, that I actually will not hear from you of all people.
No. But at quarter to six. At quarter to six. Save it for now. Now we can yell. Now we can yell.
But now I'm like, I'm easing in. It's like the nice little bubble bath of a Friday show. I was yelling then.
Mm-hmm. Are you all yelled out?
Oh, no. Believe me, I'm sure we'll step on many a landmine that'll get me yelling today. But just to pull back the curtain, how dare you get mad at... Like, again, if you were saying you used 100 too many words before six, I'd say, okay, I disagree, but like that's your prerogative. I will not hear from you that the volume of my voice is the
problem.
Why is
that? Why won't you hear that?
Because at least 2 to 3 times a show during
the
break.
You've never let me know that this is an issue for you. This, my guttural screams,
it's not an issue for me, but if you're going to tell me I can't be loud, then it is. It's just like, if you're gonna take away something from me, then I'm gonna go like, okay, I have a problem with this too.
Yeah, okay, that's your negotiation tactic.
I mean,
no problem. Listen, I will sign on the dotted line. Give me the papers.
I didn't say I wanted the deal. I'm just saying, like,
deal.
I have a different deal. We both keep doing it, and I get to complain. That's actually my favorite deal. Seinfeld, great bit about this of like, what do you like? I like to complain. I like to be mildly aggrieved so I could have something to just like, if I could just whine a little bit about that thing.
I like calm. I like serene. I like serenity. Mm. Before the insanity of 3 hours of hot sports debate, as we are going to do. Today is a very focused show, as you would expect, on the day before game one of the postseason for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the anxiety that can produce. Well, they're like a little bit of Blue Jays.
Must produce.
I don't know if it must. Like, one of these years, like, I listen, I'm going through my head all the return thoughts that I've had going into the postseason, and, you know, because we've done this show.
Boy.
Everybody on this station.
I will say it's the nice thing about working with you is that we haven't done this show yet.
No.
But like we collectively have done the show a billion times.
Yeah, there's been a lot of these shows, but it's like, oh man, wouldn't it imagine like one of these years is just like easy in a round.
You think that?
Like in a round. It's like, yeah.
It was pretty easy losing in five. Like that happened like that quick. Yeah.
It doesn't. Like, not everything has to go to a game 7 or a game 6 in overtime. I guess, like, last year, first round, that was as easy as it gets. Coming back from, what, 4-1 down to force overtime and win a game 6, a game 5 to have the chance to close it out in game 6 and then needing overtime. Oh, how easy that was for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, one of these years, like, you are allowed to win a series in 4 or 5. It hasn't happened. God forbid you don't have a winner-take-all game, which, again, they didn't have last year. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there is, like, one of these years, maybe, if the Leafs continue to get into the postseason, I mean, just mathematically, yeah, they're going to win more series. And mathematically, you would think, oh, wow, they're playing their best hockey of the season. Oh, wow, the team that they're playing in the first round isn't. and everything. They get all the bounces one of these years. Maybe this is the year. Doesn't feel like it, but yeah, like that's ringing around in my brain that one of these years, the anxiety doesn't have to be off the charts from game one, second one of the postseason for this Leafs team.
Yeah, that didn't happen in this year. Sorry, I hate to break it to you. You have to reside in the Metro, apparently, to do that, where you get to play one of those two sad sack Metro teams that squeaks their way in. I think that's the way you have to go about your business. And unfortunately, the Leafs, by, I don't know, edict of God, apparently have to play in the hardest division ever while they have the greatest collection of talent they've ever, not ever, but I mean in the league right now, while they have had their greatest collection of talent.
The West is a dogfight, though, too. Like unless you think that the Kings are, and by the way, bizarro end to the regular season yesterday.
Hand up. I sat down here, turned on my TV this morning and went, what? Oilers, Kings.
Yeah, that's
dodged a bullet big time.
Yeah,
again, like, why couldn't that just happen?
Yeah,
why could the ping pong balls, or I guess not ping pong balls, just luck of the way the season plays out? The Oilers have been sitting there with a death match against the Golden Knights, who have Mark Stone, you know, limping around, getting ready for
rematch
game
of last year's second round series. And no, not to be, because they lost to the Ducks because they played nobody, understandably, and you would have figured, you know, the Kings at home against the Blue Jack, or against Chicago, would have done the same thing. Instead, after the Blackhawks took a 4-3 lead with three consecutive goals to start the third period, power play goal with under 2 minutes to go, sends it to overtime, and the Kings win in overtime to set up a first-round matchup against the Oilers. Yeah, that's wild, wacky stuff. Anyways, let's do our preview of this Leafs-Bruins series, okay?
Let's.
Game one tomorrow after 8 o'clock. Let's just start with this. What's your initial thought on this series? Like, what is, like, if you were going to do, like, a little, what do they call it, log line, right? Like, when you're about to watch a series, like a TV series, like, what's the log line for this series?
I don't really know what that is, so I'm just going to try.
It's just like a small, like,
why
when you're
you
on
give
the
me
guide.
Yours, and then maybe I can understand.
All right, so this is a coin flip series.
Okay.
Many will view the Bruins as a significant favorite because of history and because of the regular season and the head-to-head records and the 1959 of it all. But the Leafs have the star player advantage.
Yep.
They have the offensive firepower advantage. Bruins have the better blue line and goaltending. But specifically, they use that goaltending a lot. Logically, this should be an imminently winnable series for the Maple Leafs, but the key here is that logic has not applied to anything that's taken place with this franchise over the last 20 years.
Keep going. More than 20. Just like since 67, logic has never made a lick of sense with this group. I would say what mine is that it is a two-headed goalie monster facing a two-headed goalie monster, and it's just a matter of which team they will kill. I firmly believe the Leafs goaltending will either be one of the stalwart reasons that we talk about this series from a winning perspective, from a losing perspective. That is the way I look at it. Like, it's a clash of two goaltending tandems. Yes, Matthews and star power, but it is, like it so often does at this time of year, just going to come down to that. That is the way I kind of frame it, is the two goalie tandem that we are absolutely certain what you will get from at least one of them at any given time. And then the two goalie tandem in Toronto, which has been coin flip.
Are we certain? I mean, the Allmark injury, whatever that he was dealing with in the 7-game series against the Panthers last year, I guess has to be at play here. But he was obviously healthy enough to continue to get the starts until Game 7.
Yep.
I mean, that was pretty disappointing postseason performance for the Vezina winner. Are we sure what we're going to get here? Well, first of all, I'm not sure what we're going to get as far as deployment is concerned, because these guys have just straight up alternated starts.
Seems like that's the, I mean, that is my first question for our Boston guy we got on, but that seems to be the plan. And
They have alternated every single start going all the way back to February.
Yep.
And both guys have put up incredible numbers. And boy, you dig into the numbers surrounding this Bruins team, and they play a good, cohesive, defensive team brand of hockey. Mm-hmm. But they also allow some opportunities, and they get bailed out by their great goaltending. Yep. Like, their goaltending, it's not like, well, the goaltenders aren't asked to do much.
No. They are, and they're great.
They're very, very good. But there's some recent history here with the goaltending not being very, very good. In fact, gagging all over itself in a 7-game series loss to the Florida Panthers that, yes, in retrospect, makes a ton of sense because they went all the way to the Cup final and then had a great season this year where they ended up winning the division in the last game of the regular season. But that was, you look at the seven-game series loss to the Panthers last year, there's number one reason that they lost it is because their goaltending stank.
Yeah, it's a fair thing to point out, but I am somebody who, if I'm going to have done it with this team in the past, and obviously goaltenders and position players are different things, but I'm not ready to cast the die on a guy from one postseason, even if it's a netminder. And I realize that, like, you sometimes have to do that on netminders in this league. But I think if we're going to look at body of work, I think, and maybe this is part of the mystique of Boston, when I think of a goalie that can't hack it in the playoffs, I think of it between the ears. And again, maybe this is the mystique of the Bruins and that I'm always seeing those guys do their dumb hug after every win. And it's that, you know, no matter which guy they throw it against the Leafs this year, it was always the right guy. Mm-hmm. But I just look at it as I think you look at more the body of work than the seven games last year. That's how I think if that's how I'm going to view it, what I'm talking about the Leafs, and I've certainly done that for the entirety of this Matthews era, then I gotta continue that over to the Boston side of the ledger.
Okay, then how about it going beyond the six games for Allmark and it going to eight games in his postseason career and a save percentage of .888 and Swayman, okay, he's got it over .900, but .901, like neither of these guys are exactly putting forth this incredible postseason resume.
Yeah.
And the guy that is getting the start for the Maple Leafs tomorrow, well, he didn't end his regular season all that strong, outdueled a future Hall of Famer, one of the defining goaltenders of a generation in six games last season. Now, part of that was Andre Vasilevsky didn't look so great, but whatever. Scoreboard. And yeah, he had to be great at times in a series that, on balance, the Leafs were outplayed in. Yep. And he had to go to overtime. Like, you talk about the pressures that surround this team each and every postseason game.
Yep.
I mean, talk about the pressure of playoff overtime, which we've seen, you know, Frederik Andersen in some pretty important games didn't feel like he was up to the task, it must be said.
Yeah.
And I mean, even going back to season number one against the Capitals and that overtime, what was it, game two? Where it was like shot from an impossible angle, just goes right past his glove. I mean, recent history, tell you the Leafs have, in pressure-packed moments, the goalie who's come through more often than the two Boston guys.
Yeah, that is, like, if you're going to just look at playoff track record, but again, like I just said, I look at the body of work that we've seen from all four of these guys we're talking about. I'll even lump Wall in there. And yeah, Samsonov, like, good on him. I'm not sitting here saying it is impossible or he can't out-duel or there's no world. I just think that's what it's going to come down to is you need Samsonov to be great, and I think you need him to be great early on in this series. Maybe you feel differently about it, but a world where Ilya Samsonov isn't great to start game one, but they go back to him and then...
Nah, he's not... Here's my guess, is that if he's not great in game one and he's the reason they lose game one, he's not starting game two.
I think it's entirely possible, given if I'm going to... It's funny, we're like, I'm kind of talking on both sides of my mouth, but if I'm going to believe your goaltending narrative for the Bruins here, it's like, it's entirely possible the Leafs go win a 5-4 game where Samsonov is... Okay, there's one you didn't like, but we're doing the thing we did for that Saturday game where, he bounced back and look at the second and third period he had. I just think the start of this series for Samsonov is so critical because you need to get him rolling. It's just been so, it's not been so long in the grand scheme of things, but it's been a couple weeks since we've seen full-fledged rolling Sammy, not for two periods, but for, I don't know, you know, two, three games in a row. And you just, it is such a finicky thing goaltending to be going into a series where he has been battling it in that way. I'm not writing him off as saying he can't win it, but that is why I keep looking back to the goaltending matchup because you could do it with the blue line where there's a chasm, you could do it with the forwards, but the goalie's on the ice the whole game. Those other groups you can kind of mix and match.
Yeah, and you know, one of the questions you posed in our in us trying to visualize how this preview would go was, hey, how important is game one from a pressure standpoint?
I should have sent loud. You know, you can do that with the text. I'm going to start doing that now just because the volume will work.
Oh, I see. Yeah. No, text is fine.
Okay.
And again, it won't be at quarter to six in the morning.
Don't tempt me.
That's fine. Actually, all the things that you have to say at quarter to six in the morning, send it loud text. Yeah, that sounds great.
No, I'll just read it aloud as I'm texting it to you.
So, yeah, no, it feels really important. Saturday feels really important. You got to get off to that good start, and you can't have the bad vibes. And, oh, my God, it'll feel like the sky's falling. Except they lost 7-3 to the Lightning in game one last year.
Yep.
And Ilya Samsonov didn't play the third period because he was yanked for Joe Wall. And the Leafs won in six.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what you're supposed to do with that. But, yeah, it does feel like a lot is on the line emotionally in this game one. Well, one, considering the Leafs ended the regular season on a four-game losing streak. And, yes, you can start projecting how horribly this is going to go. Plus, they lost all four regular season games to the Boston Bruins. But on the other side, like, we do this all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I know I've said this before, but it's like 93, the Joe Carter walk-off home run, the seminal moment in my sports watching, young Ben sports watching life. And I'm like, oh, everybody, everybody around the world also saw the greatness in that moment. Yeah. And then you talk like Frank Cervelli, who's like, oh, there was another. There's a whole group of people that's not like an insignificant fan base that was like, oh, that's the worst moment of their lives. But yeah, so you forget. I mean, considering the tortured existence that is being a Leaf fan, and it's not the same. Like they, they've won a cup and they've been to a cup final since the cup that they won against the Canucks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is a team that had a historic regular season and bowed out in the first round.
Well, it'll shock you. And it shocks me as I say it and I pose a question for you. I didn't look at that from a Leaf perspective. I wrote that question from a Bruins perspective.
Yeah.
I think the Leafs go into
home.
The Leafs go into Boston and lose game one. And yeah, if it is a 7-3 shellacking and Marchand is screaming at everybody after having 2-2 and, you know, Connor Geeky or Morgan Geeky or whatever geeky it is.
Geeky.
Yeah, geeky, old geeky over
Gary
there.
Greg Geeky. I can go on.
Bill Geeky is having
nerd geeky
three goals or, you know, a hat trick. Yeah, then, okay. Then the pressure feels a certain way for the Leafs. But if the Leafs go in there, and even if it is a squeaker and it's a nail biter or it's, you know, 5-4 from the Leafs perspective, any Leaf win in the first two games of this series immediately puts Boston back into that spot. And you're right. Like, we have to think about it from their perspective as well. You think they're not feeling the pressure? I don't think anybody around there in Boston is, like, saying it now, but you don't think the conversations are going to happen around, like, hey, what exactly has been the Brad Marchand tenure here? It's been amazing. Mm-hmm. No one would ever say, let's not have had it. Mm-hmm. But what do we really have to show for it? A couple first-round flames.
Stanley Cup loss.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Like, no one's going to sit here and say that it's been, but if you look at what this era of Bruins hockey has been, it's been really good teams within the grand scheme of things. If you think you're a cup champion, nothing to show for it.
Yes, it's true. I think, man.
Would kill for that nothing, by the way.
Sure. Yeah.
Actually, I got to be honest. I think I would rather have everything that have had happen than lose game seven in the Stanley Cup final, I think. Mm. Like, obviously, the team wouldn't, and then you, like, are more confident in your process and you have it. But for me personally, I don't know that I'd ever recover from that. Just saying. I'm just being honest with you.
Okay. Game seven against the Blues.
Loved and lost. Better to have loved and lost than never loved at all. Yada, yada.
No, it's an interesting point. It's just weird to think about the Leafs. That's the other thing. It's like, no Stanley Cup victory since 1967. No finals appearances. What are we talking about?
Thanks, Carey.
Yeah.
Thanks, Carey.
Okay. So to this point, last thing I want to say about, the pressure of game one thing.
Yep.
I mean, the road record and the thing that you're talking about, I think starting on the road is probably...
Oh, it's so good.
I mean, game seven on the road and in that building is not going to be great because we all know it's going there.
Maybe don't get
there. We all know it's going back to Boston for game seven, and that's... come on. That's not ideal.
No.
But yeah, the series starting there, feeling like if you get game one, you're playing with house money for game two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the problem will be not to play like that, which this team is want to do when it feels like they did the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, starting on the road, I think, is an ideal spot for this particular Leafs team. And again, if you want to shift the pressure to the Bruins, for the Bruins, in imagining a world in which you win game one and the anxiety that might start to gurgle up in that Bruins fan base.
Well, and I, you know, again, this is me like putting a good thing into the world regarding the Leafs, but... You know, if it does get to game seven, we'll all feel the way we feel. And, you know, the Leafs will have had their game seven history in that building. But the last time they played one, they lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just keep looking at it that way. Like, we think of the Bruins as this unflappable monster, but if the Leafs were to bounce them in the first round, mm-hmm. I mean, you can spin it and say, it's the Leafs. Look, they're due. They're finally supposed to. But they're going to be having real conversations about back-to-back first-round exits mm-hmm. in a post-Bergeron world. Mm-hmm. What does that mean for them? Like, come on, Jack Edwards is retiring. You can murder this generation of the Bruins. It's right there for you.
Mm-hmm. I think roster-wise, there's one big question for the Maple Leafs. It's not the goaltender. Ely Samsonov.
Nick Robertson, obviously. Does he play? No, yeah. Probably not.
No, I think the forward groups are pretty set.
Well,
Bobby McMahon, Cali Yarncroke are good to go. Those guys are both in the lineup.
Yeah, of course. But God, like, I'm sitting on pins and needles waiting for an update here. Like, the Yarncroke thing specifically, it's like, no, he's healthy. He's going to be fine. Like, it just seems like, it's just the nature of the schedule. They had the off day yesterday. They're going to be super cagey at this time of year. I understand all that. But, man, like, what that guy... That's a playoff series type of player. And it's not that and that we think of in Bertuzzi or Domi, and he's going to be in everybody's face. That's not what I mean by that. But that is a guy that is going to give you a good, honest, hard shift
player
every time.
And a 20-goal scorer.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's...
Yeah, don't forget that second part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you're reminding me. I know.
Yeah, it's an important...
It's not inconsequential. Yeah.
That they've been without for weeks and weeks. And it's been a month now.
Feels like it. I remember April 8th seeing so long ago when it was like, he can be activated April 8th. And I'm like, oh, obviously he will.
Yeah
that was 11 days ago. And so it's been a long time.
It has been.
It's been a while.
The number one question is, I think it's just one spot on the blue line. And it's the sixth defenseman. Because it does feel like we're going into this thing with Riley Labushkin, at least to start.
Yep.
And that's not Vince.
Well, that's tenuous.
Yeah.
Wrote that in an eraser. They're like, just like trace the eraser mark and leave the little, you know, like pink pigment on the page.
And like, does it look that way if they didn't get what they got out of Luke Shen playing alongside Morgan Riley last year? Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit and McCabe, I think that's going to be the shutdown pairing.
Yep.
Joel Edmondson is playing because they acquired him. And it's who's playing on his right side. Is it Timothy Liljegren or is it TJ Brody?
The guy who could play on his right side, Timothy Liljegren. Sorry. Like, I would love to have found a way to have got TJ Brody in this lineup, playing on his left side in a more sheltered role, yada, yada, yada. Not against this team, not to start the series. I guarantee you, short of the Leafs winning in five, which ain't going to happen, TJ Brody's playing in this series, probably playing a couple games in it. We've just seen the returns with him on the right side. It's not there anymore. He's not the right partner for Morgan Riley. Benoit McCabe, chemistry matters, okay? Like, we can sit here and have all the conversations about, well, isn't Edmondson just a better version of McCabe? Yeah, he is. But Joel Edmondson hasn't been playing with McCabe all year long. And Benoit and McCabe, they're not perfect. There's a reason you pick Benoit up the scrap heap. And there's a reason Jake McCabe, you're able to have him for what you got at the deadline last year, okay? Like, they are not perfect players, but that has to be your shutdown pair. And then, you know, I said this mostly tongue-in-cheek after the Florida game, but I firmly believe it. I don't know why. I don't know what he did. I don't know if they give him like you know how in the NFL the quarterbacks have the green dot on their helmet. I don't know if Edmondson has one of those, but he's allowed to play playoff style rules. He's just allowed to cross check and do whatever he wants.
The size.
I think it's the size. It's that he's been around for a while. He's not an overly mouthy guy. It doesn't seem like to officials. I don't know what it is. Whatever it is, I should probably stop talking about it so he keeps being allowed to do it. That guy's in the lineup, and you need a right-hand shot. TJ Brody can't play there. I went and looked at the Brody McCabe minutes from this year to see, like, ooh, is there anything there? Can you force him in? You can't. That pair was not good.
Yeah, in the postseason last year, it wasn't very good either.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you start, I mean, if you talk about not good, though, Timothy Liljegren has not been good in the postseason either in his career. I think you have to start this way. I agree. Like, Like, that's the thing that is most in flux when it comes to this roster. I mean, maybe there's a scenario where, boy, you really need some offense and you're looking at Nick Robertson to create it for you. But I think that's less likely than, okay, we're back to Timothy Liljegren postseason. It's not there for him. And you got to make a pivot to a guy that, at least has the upside. And we've seen it in TJ Brody. But you got to start this way. Considering it feels like the best of TJ Brody is behind him.
Yeah, I do still think there's a role where if you could, And he's a different player than Joel Edmondson, and that's why you're not going to put him in that spot. But if Joel Edmondson didn't exist, I'd be fine with having given Brody some run alongside Liljegren on a third pair in that role. And I think he could be still competent in that role. I think he can still be fine, but not in this series. It's not the matchup for him against Boston. That's, again, he's going to play. Like, he's going to get in this series short of the Leafs walking through it in five games, but it's just not the guy to start it. And there's just, it's funny. It's, this is the weirdest thing about the TJ Brody of it all this year, is that for a guy who for the first 3.5 years of his Leafs tenure, or honestly, like 3.75 years of his Leafs tenure, was the perfect guy to put with any defenseman on the team to get them going, to get them right. And all of a sudden, there's no partner for him. Does not matter who you put him with. It just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And it's just so jarring how quickly that can happen to a guy. Now, obviously, part of this is roster machinations. If they were hell-bent on getting a partner for TJ Brody the way they were for getting one for Morgan Rielly, then you could find a way to do that. Mm-hmm. But it's just so jarring that the guy who is Mr. Fixer for everybody,
oh, yeah,
he needs a little help and no one can give it to him.
Yeah, he's broken. I guess there is a question about who is the third winger on that fourth line. Again, this is all, it depends on the health of Bobby McMahon and Kelly Yarncroke. But if everybody's healthy and you got David Kampf centering a line with Matthew Nyes, you would think, who's, you know, kind of emerged like on that fourth line, like he's doing some things.
No, they should give him a ring at stick so he doesn't even think about the puck. Just go out there and run people through the boards.
Yeah, it's kind of working for him on that fourth line. I guess there's a question about Connor Dewar or Ryan Reaves, and whether you lean towards Dewar's penalty killing and I guess the versatility of being able to play him up the middle. Mm-hmm. Although we haven't seen much of that.
Okay, sure. Says the William Nylander at center. It's like, he could do it. You sure?
Yeah. It did feel like when we were headed for weeks and weeks towards a matchup with the Panthers that the Ryan Reaves game one thing was real, and he has been a real revelation end of the season. I tend to think that they're going to go with Reaves for game one. I suppose if the penalty kill is as horrific as it could be, you go back to 2019, the major reason the Leafs lose that series is because the Bruins' power play was unbelievable, but there's no Patrick Bergeron walking through that door anymore.
Please, God.
I think they go Ryan Reaves, but that's a question. Connor Dewar or Ryan Reaves?
I think Kyle Yarncroke takes care of that. If Yarncroke can play, he takes Dewar's spot on the penalty kill, and then that's his biggest utility there. You're right. Like, in theory, you could play Dewar up the middle, but in theory, you could play Yarncroke up the middle just as... Well, I was about to say just as easily, but let's be honest, just as poorly. You could play either of them up the middle. I think if you are forced to put in Reaves, let's say everybody's healthy and they go, you know what, we want our 12 best forwards. Sorry, Revo, that's not you. And they put Dewar in there. And then the game goes the way we can all envision. I don't think it's going to go that way, but where it's the big bad Bruins, and they're running people through boards, and Marchand's doing everything he threatened in that clip that Bruins fans love so much for some reason, where he's
and then
whining.
He didn't.
Where he didn't do anything. Yeah, bluffing. Oh, yeah, look at our guy, the bluffer. Okay, keep bragging about it. Then it's seen as reactive. It's you having to meet what Boston's doing in the series, whereas if you put Reaves in and the game doesn't go that way, I mean, we saw it a lot at the beginning of the season. I highly doubt they lose game one because of Ryan Reaves. Like, I don't think this is a Ryan Reaves' -3 scenario.
No, we're beyond that.
Right? So I think that you have to put him in to start so that he's not seen as reactive. And then if the series has a bit of a different tenor, or if he sent his message, or I don't know, like if he gets suspended, crazier things have happened, then you get Dewar in there.
The Leafs are killing off a 5-minute penalty or something of that nature. Yeah. Yeah, you can adjust, but yeah, you got to start with the game one lineup that I think we all envisioned against the Panthers, where Ryan Reaves has been a big part of that fourth line.
Yeah, and the idea of, like, it's not just been the Ryan Reaves is there and he's going to be woofing at Marchand on the bench or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's really doing a good job of getting in there on the forecheck, using his body, and this is the other part of it as well, is that
on a one-game scoring streak as well.
Well, you can't take him out then. Yeah. That's right. Good point. We always say they need that secondary scoring. Mm-hmm. So if a guy's hot, you got to keep him in there.
But correct.
We talk about this all the time in playoff series. You take bites out of guys in game one and two so that it pays dividends in game six and seven. And I don't think Revo's going to do anything stupid, but I think he knows exactly where the line is, and he's going to be taking as many bites out of people as he can if you put him in there in game one. And honestly, it's just, we talk all the time, but wouldn't it be nice if? Well, they have that guy, so wouldn't it be nice if? Go use him.
Who's the biggest Leafs X factor headed into this series?
I had trouble with this because it's like, X factor, where do we draw the line?
Yeah, you know, well, this it can't be Matthews, no. Marner, Tavares, and Nylander. Although you're trying to force Tavares?
No. I'm like, is Bertuzzi allowed to be the X factor? Well, or is he playing on the first line with Matthews?
No.
Okay, he's not allowed?
No, if you're on the first line, okay, that's not an X factor.
I'm just making sure. Okay, so then your X factor for this series, we talked about him. He's on the fourth line. Nothing is expected of him now.
Oh.
Matthew Nice.
That's interesting.
This is a guy who can move up and down the lineup. He can't go move down anymore other than the press box.
Yeah.
He has no business being there given the way he's playing right now. And I think playing him with Kampf and whether it's Revo or Dewar, it doesn't really matter. There's no offense expected of him. And it allows him to kind of remove that part of the game from his brain. And when you do that, you get such a more effective player. And he still has the hands and the skill to score when it's there. So I don't think he is going to be the best Leaf forward by any means. But there are going to be two or three moments in this series where, oh, look at that. Matthew Nyes. Sheldon Keefe likes what he's doing. He's back in the top six. Oh, look at that. Matthew Nyes. Big screen in front. I just think he is going to take a step. And a big, big part of it is that expectations have taken a step back. So maybe it's all just kind of normalizing, but that's the guy I look at as my X factor.
Yeah, he's been on the ice.
It's very cute that you thought I was going to say Tavares, though.
Well, I was like, yeah, I know he's the captain, but yeah, he's also
the C factor.
Yeah, he's also fine in the back of the net recently at the end of the season. Yeah, I mean, Matthew Nyes was on the ice for some pretty important goals for the Maple Leafs last year.
Until he got maimed and killed in the Florida series.
Correct. Yeah, he's asked to play a different role this year. Yeah, that's an interesting guy. He was not the guy that first came to mind. And so much of this has to do with what we're going to find out today. Mm-hmm. The Leafs one and only practice before game one tomorrow.
The actual X factor is the team doctor clearing all these guys.
Yeah. Right. Man, Bobby McMahon was just such a huge part of what the Maple Leafs did when they figured it out after the 7-game winning streak, right? Yep. Just like the 15 goals were not flukes, right? It was such a fun story when he was scoring the hat trick after Matthews. Yeah. It was like, we were joking about the Spider-Man memes. Because, like, Bobby McMahon's just a jobber.
Yeah.
And we'll never see him again.
Mm.
No, like, huge, huge part of what the Maple Leafs did. And it just, what he brings to this team and in the role that he's going to be asked to play. Couldn't you see him coming up with a massive goal? And again, going back to the 5 games against the Panthers, obviously you need the stars to score, but secondary scoring's got to come from somewhere. And as much as you want to talk about Nick Robertson shooting it in the back of the net and his limited opportunities, again, 15 goals in the 56 games that he was playing, and only by the end of his regular season tenure before he got hurt was he starting to get those elevated minutes and an elevated role on this team. If Bobby McMahon is good to go, I think he's a huge part of what the Maple Leafs do this postseason.
Yeah, and just throw it, like, the scoring has to be there, but just throw in the physicality of it again. Like, it's not lost on me, or I don't think a lot of people, like, so, you know, I'm looking at the lines, and this is, again, presuming everybody's healthy. It's like they have a guy with some jam on almost all lines. I don't think it's fair to say that with like Yarncroc, Holmberg, and Nylander. It's like even Yarncroc, it's like it's not quite jam. It's a berry that hasn't quite been squished. But it's like Nyes, Kampf, Revo, jam there. The Marner, JT, McMahon line. Like McMahon gives it to you. JT's not going to overly get in anybody's face, but he doesn't necessarily back down from anything either. And then, I mean, Domi and Bertuzzi are crazy, and Austin Matthews scores 69 goals. So I think you just really like what you've got up and down it, and that's the thing. For so often in the past with these Leafs teams, it's like, all right, the skill line is out there. Go score a goal.
Right.
All right, the two punt lines are out there. Kill someone and please give up nothing. And now it's like you can actually expect a little bit of both from all four lines.
From somebody on each and every line. All right, what's the biggest Boston X factor?
It's what version, this is unfair because this isn't a person, but it's like a question. It's what version of Brad Marchand do you get? This guy had, 67 points this year? I hate that number, by the way. Like, he couldn't have got one more or one less point. Don't like that. But that's not what we think of when we think of Brad Marchand, Team Canada winger, stapled to Crosby and Bergeron and Pasternak in Boston. That's not the guy we think of, but if he gets his mojo going and they win game one and he's woofing to the crowd and he's woofing at the Leafs and they're feeling, he's feeling, well, I was about to say 10 feet tall, but for him, feeling tall feels like 6 feet tall. That's the guy that if you get full blown playoff Marchand, that's their X factor right there.
I mean,
is that cheating?
No, I'll allow it.
You'll allow it?
I mean, because
what it says,
because yeah. Mine is, yeah, I guess, me. Also kind of a cheat because it doesn't even, you had a name. Like, I don't even have a name.
Oh, you just have like an idea?
Well, it's whoever's starting in goal for game two.
Okay, that's fair. No, that's good. I like that. That's very.
Game two goalie. Because, I mean, on the one hand, if the Bruins lose game one and then they do the thing that we all expect them to do where they alternate goalies, the thing that they've done all season long, all the pressure in the world on that game two starter not to let the series start to slip away from them and go down 0-2. And secondarily, you win game one and you're the game two starter. You're like, oh, well, I can't be the reason why.
That's a great point.
We split this. And then, you know, then there are real questions about game four. And like, is this alternating thing going to work? Shouldn't they just be riding the hot hand? I think there's a myriad of questions that come out of alternating goalies. Like We've seen it in recent vintage where, like, the Braden Holtbys don't start game one of a postseason series, and then they're hoisting the Stanley Cup over their heads. But, like, I don't,
man,
for
I
my money,
can't
I
can't ever remember this.
No, it just, and I understand it. Like, why go away from what worked during the regular season? You know why?
Because the playoffs are different.
Like, it's different. It's different. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, the Blue Jays, you know, they didn't use their relievers in a certain way during the regular season, so why start doing it? Because the playoffs are different. Now, it's a bad example because they didn't.
I'm like, what are you getting at here?
No, the playoffs are different.
So what I'm hearing is they should pull Ullmark after the second period, just depending regardless of how it's going.
By the way, have you recently looked at Brad Marchand's hockey reference page?
I haven't.
For my money,
the nickname is that what you're about to go to?
But no, there's so many of
them. Oh, I mean, there's the one I'm like, I don't even know if I was like allowed to call them that on air, but yeah, there's one that jumps out of my mind.
Well, I mean, it's on the
Nose Face Killer? Yeah, that's the one I immediately think of with him.
Precious Little Angel, not one that I'm familiar with.
Little ball of hate.
Sure, sure. Rat.
Yeah, for sure.
Brat.
I can say
the
rat emoji is like, you know how the phone does it where it's like, here are your frequently used emojis. Rat is right there this time of year, let me tell you.
Honey Badger? That's not him.
All right. Anyway. No, I feel Honey Badger's like a classic. Like, there's 300,000 Honey Badgers. Like, the real one. Mm-hmm. Tyrann Mathieu, of course. But yeah, million.
Okay, we'll obviously come back around to this.
Nose Face Killer. Yeah, so good. Whoever dubbed him that, great job.
And listen, am I waiting for the, like, quadruple overtime game in which, and maybe it happens in this series, where someone's like, man, this game is longer than Brad Marchand's nose? I certainly am. Like, I'm very much looking forward to that.
You said it, not me. But, like, same. But actually not, because I think one way or another, 4-OT Leafs playoff game, I would just cease to exist. One way or another.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, we will delve ever so slightly into the Blue Jays series against the Padres. Starts tonight, Yariel Rodriguez making his second career Major League start. And boy, somebody killing it in Buffalo right now, making waves and potentially becoming a relevant factor for the Major League team in the coming days. Talk about that and more next. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Kudos to the San Diego Padres for, I mean, relatively an early start time tonight, before 10 o'clock. When you get a West Coast game that starts before 10 o'clock, just, okay.
I'll do it too. Yeah. No, hey, good job. Good job.
Well done.
It's also a great observation by you.
It's pretty great.
It's a pretty good one of those. The other thing with it is that the problem with it is like I can only give them so much credit because they're not starting at 7 o'clock, and I am used to that when like Toronto based teams go on the West Coast occasionally.
Yeah, that's the
poking
that's,
the bear yeah. with you, Vancouver.
No, well,
it's like that's my bar though. That's the problem. It's like we have full capitulation, mm-hmm. so it's like this is partial capitulation, 20 mm-hmm. minute capitulation.
I don't
if
think
you will.
It's even capitulation. I think it's the Padres like obviously deciding that this is a good time for them because nobody capitulates to the Blue Jays or the Toronto market in any sport. And it's just in that one instance when they're playing Canadian teams on Hockey Night in Canada.
God, I love it so much.
Other than that, though, if you're a Canadian sporting franchise, yeah, you get no capitulation. Nope. It's like you capitulate to everybody else. So I don't think it has too much to do with the Blue Jays. It's just the Padres are like, yeah, we like to do this thing just before 7 o'clock Pacific.
It's classic San Diego. They're like, we have to like get this over with.
Ever so been? Oh, you don't go places.
Yeah, why? Like, especially, I have to be honest. That is and this is like just a window into my soul. I'm like, so what? It's nice. It's like, you got to go to San Diego. The weather's nice. I'm like,
really nice.
Yeah, okay, the weather's nice. Oh, great. Like, what? They don't even have a cool ballpark. Why would I go?
Yeah, it's the coolest. It is amazing. Petco? Yeah. Are you being serious? No.
You're gonna tell me where I got like Dodger Stadium and whatever they call San Fran's Park these days on the same coast?
They're all different. Like of the three, I'd honestly rank Petco one.
Ew. I shouldn't be allowed to have an opinion, I guess, but I'm going
no,
to.
Certainly
ew.
Not.
Here's the one time I'd go to Petco. They sometimes set up like a par three course in there. I don't know if you've seen this, if this made its way in your
I
world,
saw
the golf
that this
baseball
is,
crossover.
Yeah, there's a
that
traveling
was the, that
road
was the
show.
Originator of it. That was the first place they ever, well, like I'm sure somebody set up golf holes at not a golf course before. But that was first like major league stadium they did it in. So that's like, it's like, yeah, I'd love to go to Petco to play golf.
No, it's amazing. It's a truly incredible stadium.
It's so nice outside.
I mean, that's part of it. I can't imagine ever glossing over, you know, nice weather considering you spent 9 months a year. By the way, I was on Calgary Radio yesterday. And
what
I
are you talking about? Leafs? Jays? What?
Jays and then a little Leafs. But I was talking about, hey, normally I'm going home from my nap. I'm playing golf today. And they're like, oh, yeah, it snowed yesterday. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they mentioned that to me actually at Calgary Radio Monday, and they were like, "It's so cold."
Yeah. As if like that wouldn't affect your mood, and you wouldn't enjoy living in a place where you could golf all year round. But okay.
Yeah, no, but okay, but like people talk about San Diego like it's like this perfect humid. Like it's like there's no other nice places on earth. Why does it get to be so nice?
It's one of the nice places.
Okay.
It was nice when I was there. Anyways, the ballpark is incredible. It's like built right into the city. It's like you don't even notice. There's a ballpark, and then all of a sudden you're walking down the street. And it's like, oh, you're like in the ballpark, and literally
I feel
left
like you
field.
Had to show a ticket to somebody.
No, you just walk in. Oh, I'm like, I'm playing first base. No, and left field, the foul pole is
I was gonna
half
say they have
corner
that.
Of a building. Like
that looks cool. I will give them that. That is
amazing.
Cool. Okay,
it's an amazing ballpark.
It's so offensive. It's so offended when I don't glowingly speak praise of San Francisco.
It's San Diego.
Oh, right. Yeah. Whatever. See, this is how little I care.
Yeah.
So what?
You've never been.
Yeah. Fair weather fans.
You've never been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never will go to San Diego. I could not imagine what would bring me out there. It's like other cities out there for sure. San Diego.
Yeah. Anyways, maybe go to Torrey Pines, but okay. I guess not.
Other better golf courses closer.
Anyways.
Stop putting cheese in the trap. You mentioned a golf thing again. I'm going to say something about it. Blue Jays.
Playing a Padres team that is obviously minus one of their major contributors from a season ago in Juan Soto, but still some dudes. There are some guys.
Well, and they've had their experience with that. Like, the reprieve from Juan Soto is just fine for these 3 days.
Yeah, and they're off to a reasonable start. Just came away with a couple of consecutive series victories, including one against their divisional rivals, the Dodgers. They're off to an 11-10 start. But Yariel Rodriguez, the headline item for the Blue Jays, making a second career major league start. What are your expectations for Mr. Rodriguez?
Yeah, I think you want to see him build off of what you saw last time out. It's something that I think we'll all be kind of keeping an eye on closely. It's what we talked about with Siddle after the last start when he had him on. This is a guy who is messing around with his release points during games. And if you can do that consistently and effectively, it is a incredible weapon to have to your arsenal, but it is also something, and, you know, I wouldn't feel this way if we had a long track record with the player, but we don't. So that's something I'm going to be watching early, is just the consistency. Like, I don't think you need to see him hit a number on the gun, or there's a, you know, a number of batters you want to see him face and get through relatively cleanly. For me, it is just about, can he be more or less what he was last time with those inconsistent but intentionally inconsistent delivery points on his pitches.
Yeah, I think shutting down the Rockies is different than shutting down Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado, and Xander Bogaerts. But I will say also, I mean, a couple of walks, just not horrible in 3 2/3 innings.
Yep.
When you're playing a ballpark like Petco, you got to fill up the zone. Can't put runners on.
Yeah,
you got to make them hit their way on base here, because it is so difficult to hit a home run in that ballpark. And another great start from him really amps up the pressure on Alek Manoah to not just be healthy and like, hey, I threw strikes. And, you know, him judging by the comments he made of the belief that all I have to do is like get stretched out and the results don't even matter.
Well, and I'm going to keep bang at home, and I would agree with him based on how familiar and friendly and a part of this team he feels in that dugout. Like, I think he has had some...
Yeah, well, but another good Yariel Rodriguez start, and yep, maybe more pitches thrown, the less likely that is, and the higher the bar for performance is for Alek Manoah if he wants to rejoin this Blue Jays rotation. What do you want to see from the bullpen going into this game, considering the ninth inning meltdown in game 3 of the Yankees series?
Yeah, I think you just want to see, I think you want to see Garcia get put in a good leverage spot. I think that's maybe the thing to watch most out of this, is how the leverage spots get bandied out. Obviously, it didn't go well for Swanson. It's important to get him back in a leverage spot as well in this series, though.
Swanson in a leverage spot?
Well, I don't think you don't put him out there to close a game or in the eighth inning, but I think
I think you got to get him in low leverage.
You think you build him up that way? I think if he's
looks so bad.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you it's a terrible idea to put him in low leverage. Obviously, that's like
You have enough leverage arms, especially if Chad Green is healthy and good to go.
Well, I think that's that's obviously would complicate the picture if Chad Green's healthy. I think it's about, this is a long-term thought versus a win this ball game tonight thought. I think that bullpens are a capricious animal, and, you know, there's volatility year to year.
No, that's the knuckleball.
But I think you still need, you're going to need Swanson. You're going to need him in leverage. And I think there is a piece of you, or a piece of me anyways, that says you go back to him, and it's not to close the game. It's not with Machado coming up with two men on, of course. But I think you want to give him a spot that has some consequence. I'm not saying it has to be tonight, but this weekend, because I don't think you want that guy lingering with that result. And
no,
I don't think him going and cleaning up, having a clean sixth inning is doing that for him.
I think it is. I think you got to have him have some positive results. Mm. And I think you'd be nervous to put him in a one-run game either way, whether the leading or trailing. I think you want to get him.
Yeah, okay, maybe by leverage, I mean like it's a 2-3 run spot in the 6th-7th inning. So I guess maybe to you that's not leverage. It's like lower leverage is how I look at it. I'm not putting him in there to close a game. I'm not putting him in there in the 8th.
Yeah, I think if the Blue Jays are leading by 5 runs, like, that'd be a nice spot for Eric Swanson. At least the Eric Swanson I saw in the 9th inning against the Yankees on Wednesday. Dalton Varsho looking to keep it rolling. Did you know, like, this is small sample size stuff?
Mm.
But I mentioned, like, don't touch him where he is in the lineup right now.
Right.
You know, all his damages come as a 7-hole hitter on this team.
Amazing.
All 4 of his home runs coming in the 6 games that he's had hitting 7th. Now it should be said that those are the most plate appearances he's had there, but he's had pretty close to the same number of plate appearances hitting 5th with an OPS under 600. Hitting 9th, the OPS is a little higher. It's almost 700, but it's 1228 in the 6 games and 21 plate appearances hitting 7th. Just leave him where he is. I know he's going great, but don't mess with success here. This is a ballpark he knows very well as well, considering his time in the National League West.
Well, and I also just think this is, I mean, he's not going to hit one out. Like, I feel confident in predicting that just because it is Petco, and, you know, he's still Dalton Varsho after all, but he's going to matter a ton in this series. You mentioned it. Like, there's just so much area to play with from a defensive standpoint. You're going to need him to cover a ton of grounds. There was that stat going around that going back to the start of last year, he leads all outfielders in defensive run saves or outs above average. This is a good time for him to kind of lean into the other traits of his game. That doesn't mean you want him to stop hitting. It doesn't mean he needs to stop or anything along those lines, but I think that this is a good, it's a great place for him to be in, that even if the bat kind of cools off this weekend, I still think you're going to have a few good Dalton Varsho moments.
Lastly, I teased it going into the segment that Aurelvis Martinez is a murdering baseballs right now, and he murdered one off Anthony Gose yesterday.
Jay's legend.
Who's coming back. He had a modicum of success in his brief foray into the major leagues as a reliever. I believe he spent last year injured. Did not pitch in professional baseball last year. But all of a sudden, he's got three home runs after, I think, not having a home run in his first seven games or something around that line. He has three now with the OPS over 900. Yeah, the home run potential in particular would be much thanked for if he was in the major leagues right now for the Toronto Blue Jays. The problem for him is the positional fit.
Yeah.
He's playing second base right now, which actually, that's a nice position if you can play it. I don't know what to make of the five errors that he's committed in now 14 games at second base. But that's a guy that, like, the longer this goes without the Blue Jays having a real home run threat and him continuing to mash baseballs in Buffalo, I know Addison Barger's also off to a great start as well. And maybe his positional fit makes a little more sense because he can play a capable third base and he hasn't committed any errors out there. And he can also play corner outfield spot. I think we already know that Spencer Horwitz, I think, is a major league bat. But yeah, he plays first base and is a DH. We don't need any more of those. But yeah, to me, Aurelvis Martinez could be the guy that more people are pounding the table for the more this continues and the more the Blue Jays continue to get, capable offensive games out of Ernie Clement and IKF, but not homers. Like, there's no chance those guys are going yard. I know Ernie Clement has a huge pinch hit home run this year. That's not part of his game.
No.
It's the main part of Aurelvis Martinez's game.
Yeah, he can play with that like practice fielding mitt they give you where there's no actual glove and make all the errors he wants if he's going to do that and hit ninth inning homers. Like, there is going to come to a point where even for the pitching and defense team, there's going to be a line of no return where if he can do that at the major league level, especially given what is available to this team at the major league level, you're going to have to make it that move at some point in time. But this is the beautiful thing about prospects. Like, keep asking to do it. Keep asking to prove it.
Yep. All right. When we come back, all we're doing is asking the Toronto Maple Leafs to win a postseason series for the first time since 1959 against the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, it's not hard.
Just do that.
Just do that.
Okay. We'll get back into series preview coming up next. The Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.